The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a closer look at a framework that really pushes back against our usual definition of success. You know, the one that's almost entirely about, well, money.
Exactly. We're diving into Sahil Bloom's concept, the five types of wealth.
It feels really relevant right now, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Because the core issue he tackles is this kind of modern paradox. You see it everywhere. The person who's killing it financially, big salary, impressive job title, but they feel empty.
Yeah, unfulfilled. Maybe their health isn't great or they've lost touch with people who actually matter to them.
Right. He has this great phrase for it. Wealthy but poor. Hits hard, doesn't it?
It really does. Wealthy but poor.
Yeah.
So our mission today really is to get past that narrow view of what prosperity means. We want to give you a more complete, actionable way to think about building a life that feels genuinely rich, you know, way beyond just the bank balance.
Totally. And your mission, as you're listening, is to pick up the tools to become what Bloom calls a conscious wealth architect, someone who like intentionally designs their life across all these crucial areas.
Making sure they all work together.
Yeah.
Not against each other.
Exactly. Building that synergy. So before we actually jump into the five types themselves, maybe we should talk a little about Sahil Bloom, the guy behind this idea. His background is pretty interesting, and it definitely shapes his perspective.
Yeah, he's not just an academic theorist. He's been in the trenches.
Right. He's an entrepreneur, an investor, worked in venture capital and private equity with places like SRB Ventures, Altamont Capital Partners. So he really understands that traditional world of financial success, how that game is played.
But what makes him different, I think, is that he actually achieved that kind of success and pretty early on, right? Lived the life that, you know, society tells us is the ultimate goal.
And he found it lacking.
Yeah.
Realized money by itself wasn't enough for genuine fulfillment. That's huge.
Which led him to make a big shift. He moved away from that finance track to become a full-time writer and educator. He created the Curiosity Chronicle. Built this massive online following.
And that pivot is key, I think, because his work now blends that sharp analytical thinking from his finance days. He's a Stanford grad, very systems-oriented with real personal insight and research into psychology.
So it's practical. It's not just abstract ideas. It's grounded in his own experience of navigating that pressure cooker and finding a different path. He's lived both sides.
Exactly. It makes his advice feel really credible.
Okay, so let's get into the core idea then. The central thesis is that true wealth isn't just piling up money. It's more like managing a balanced portfolio, but for your whole life.
Right.
Five different but connected kinds of currency.
Yeah, like diversification for your well-being, not just your stocks. He really applies systems thinking to how you design your life. And he gives these five types really evocative names that kind of capture their role.
Well, yeah, what are they?
So first up, there's financial wealth. That's the money, the assets. Pretty straightforward, but he calls it the enabler.
The enabler. Okay, I like that. It's a tool.
Exactly. Then number two is physical wealth. Your health, your energy, vitality. He calls this the foundation.
Makes sense. Can't build much on shaky ground.
Nope. Third is social wealth. This is all about your relationships, your network, connection. And this one is the multiplier.
Ooh, the multiplier. Why that?
Because strong connections tend to amplify everything else, opportunities, happiness, even resilience.
Interesting. Okay, what's fourth?
Fourth is intellectual or mental wealth. This covers your knowledge, skills, learning, but also emotional intelligence, mental resilience. This is the engine of growth.
The engine keeps you moving forward, adapting. Got it.
And finally, the fifth one, which sort of ties it all together, is purpose or time wealth. This is about autonomy, having control over how you spend your time, feeling connected to something meaningful. He calls this the guiding compass or maybe the ultimate goal.
The guiding compass. Okay, so financial, physical, social, intellectual, and time purpose wealth. The enabler, foundation, multiplier, engine, and compass.
You got it. And the absolute key insight, like you hinted at, is that these aren't separate silos. They're interconnected. They should multiply each other.
Right. So if you chase just one, usually money really hard, you often end up draining the others. You sacrifice health or relationships.
And ironically, that can even undermine the financial success in the long run. Burnout, broken networks, it catches up. The goal is integration, using your financial resources, for example, to boost the other four, not deplete them.
avoiding that wealthy but poor trap we talked about.
Precisely.
So Bloom starts off by talking about something he calls the wealth delusion. Why do so many people feel this emptiness despite achieving conventional success?
Well, he argues it's because we're fundamentally optimizing for the wrong things. Society gives us these external markers, mostly financial, and we chase them, falling into some pretty common psychological traps.
Like the hedonic treadmill.
Exactly. That's the big one, you know? You work incredibly hard to get the promotion, the bigger house, whatever.
Yeah.
You get it. Feel good for maybe a week, maybe a month. And then, poof.
You're back to your baseline happiness level, already looking for the next thing.
Right. The goalpost just keeps moving. It's exhausting and ultimately unfulfilling.
And that gets amplified like crazy today with comparison culture, right? Social media especially.
Oh, massively. We're constantly comparing our messy, real insides to everyone else's carefully curated, often financially focused highlight reels. It creates this impossible standard of enough that you can just never reach.
It's a recipe for feeling inadequate no matter how well you're actually doing.
Totally. And that realization leads directly into why he emphasizes physical wealth so much, calling it the foundation.
He's really clear that this one is non-negotiable.
Absolutely. Because think about it, if you don't have energy, if you're constantly tired or sick,
yeah,
how effective can you really be at anything else? Earning money, learning new things, even just being present with your family.
Yeah, your capacity is just shot.
So things like exercise, getting enough sleep, decent nutrition, they're not just nice to haves or like chores. He frames them as critical, high-leverage investments in your energy economics.
Energy economics. I like that. You're investing in the core resource that fuels everything else you want to do.
Exactly. If your energy output is low, your whole life portfolio takes a hit.
Okay, so if health is the bedrock, the foundation, let's talk about the one everyone usually focuses on, financial wealth. How does Bloom reposition money within this bigger system? He calls it the enabler. What does that really mean?
It means its primary, its highest purpose isn't just accumulation for its own sake. It's to provide options, to grant you autonomy.
Autonomy, control over your life.
Yes. He makes this crucial distinction. Money is a tool, not a scorecard. That shift in perspective changes everything.
How so?
Well, if it's a tool, the point of making smart financial decisions, saving, investing, maybe building passive income, is ultimately to buy back your time.
Buy back your time.
Meaning you can use money to reduce friction in your life. Maybe you delegate tasks you dislike. Maybe you automate things. Maybe you reach a level of financial independence where you don't have to trade your time for money in ways that drain you. It frees up your energy and focus to invest in the other four wealths.
Okay. So it's the difference between chasing endless financial accumulation, which never stops, versus aiming for financial independence, which is more about achieving a certain quality of life and freedom.
Exactly. One is about more. The other is about enough to live the life you actually want.
Got it. Now, what about social wealth? The multiplier. That sounds important.
It's huge.
Yeah.
He points to research like those long-term Harvard studies showing that the strength of your relationships is literally the single best predictor of longevity and life satisfaction, more than money, more than fame.
Wow. The single best predictor.
Yeah. So investing in connection isn't just fluffy stuff. It's a core strategic asset for your health, your happiness, even your career. Strong networks open doors. Deep relationships provide resilience when things get tough.
But isn't there often a trade-off? Like focusing on relationships takes time away from work or deep focus. The classic lone wolf success story.
He tackles that directly. He argues that, yes, it requires intentionality. You need to consciously nurture both kinds of connections. The deep, intimate ones, your inner circle that give you strength, and the broader networks that provide social capital, opportunity, different perspectives.
So depth and breadth.
Right. He suggests that the lone wolf idea is largely a myth, and pursuing it, even if you get rich, often leads to a profoundly impoverished life in other ways. You end up isolated.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's move to the engine. Intellectual or mental wealth. This isn't just about being book smart, is it?
No, not at all. It's much broader. It's about actively building up your mental capital. That includes practical skills, learning new things, developing useful mental models for thinking.
But also emotional intelligence, like managing your own emotions, understanding others.
Yes, critically. And mental resilience, the ability to bounce back from setbacks. It's the whole package that allows you to learn, adapt, and grow throughout your life.
He has this great phrase, cognitive compound interest. Can you unpack that?
Yeah, it's a brilliant metaphor. Just like money compounds, so does knowledge and understanding.
Small, consistent efforts, reading regularly, taking a course, reflecting on experiences, learning a new skill, don't just add up linearly.
They build on each other.
Exactly. Each new piece of knowledge makes it easier to connect ideas, to learn the next thing faster. It creates this compounding effect that makes you way more adaptable, insightful, and ultimately more valuable over time. It's the engine driving your growth.
Okay, so we have the five types. What holds them all together? You mentioned an integration system.
Right. This is where it gets really practical. The goal isn't to max out any single type of wealth in isolation. It's about creating synergy between them. It forces you to look at the choices and trade-offs you make every single day through this five-part lens.
Can you give an example of a bad trade versus a good one?
Sure. A classic bad or abstractive trade is sacrificing your physical wealth for financial wealth. Think chronic stress, pulling all-nighters constantly, terrible diet, all to chase a promotion or bonus.
Yeah, we've all seen or done that.
And you might get the money, but you often end up paying for it later with burnout, health problems.
Yeah.
You've extracted from one area to gain in another, and the net result might even be negative.
So what's a smart synergistic trade?
A synergistic trade might be using some financial wealth to, say, hire a cleaner or use a meal bottle service. That costs money, yes, but it buys back your time wealth.
Ah, freeing up hours.
Exactly. And you can then invest that freed up time and mental energy into physical wealth. Maybe you actually have time to exercise now. Or social wealth, spending quality time with family. See how that one financial decision ripples positively across multiple areas?
Yeah, it's a net gain across the whole portfolio.
That's the idea. And he recommends doing a regular personal wealth audit. Like literally sit down and rate yourself maybe 1 to 10 in each of the five areas.
Be honest about where you stand.
Brutally honest. It immediately highlights where the imbalances are, where you might be overinvested or more likely underinvested. It makes you a conscious manager of your total life portfolio.
When you zoom out and look at the whole framework, some big themes really emerge. The most powerful one for me is just how interconnected everything is.
Totally. It's a system. They genuinely reinforce each other. Like, you focus on your physical wealth, better sleep, exercise, and what happens? Your mental wealth improves, you have more focus, make better decisions.
Or your social wealth is strong, you have good support networks. That helps protect your mental wealth when you face financial stress or setbacks.
Exactly. It creates these positive feedback loops, these virtuous cycles. But it only really works if you're paying attention to all five areas.
Which leads to the next big idea, intentional design over default living. You can't just drift and hope for the best.
Right. Most people unconsciously adopt society's default script, which is usually heavily skewed towards financial wealth. Bloom is saying, no, you have to be a conscious architect. You need to build systems, habits, routines that automatically support all five dimensions.
So it's not just about willpower or hustling harder. It's about designing your environment and your schedule.
Precisely. Which ties into the idea of sustainable versus extractive approaches. Are your strategies for getting ahead building you up overall, or are they depleting vital resources in other areas?
Like, is your career success destroying your health or your marriage? That's an extractive approach.
Yeah. A sustainable approach finds ways to grow, ideally, across all areas, or at least ensures gains in one area don't come at a devastating cost to another. It's about long-term integrated flourishing.
And ultimately, all of this seems to point towards the freedom framework. That seems to be the unifying goal.
I think so. When you have a healthy balance across all five wealths, what you gain is genuine freedom. The freedom to choose how you spend your time, who you spend it with, what work you do, how you engage with the world.
That autonomy, that control.
Mm.
That's the real measure of a rich life, not just the dollar amount.
Couldn't agree more.
The book has some really memorable lines that kind of crystallize these ideas. They're good anchors to hold on to.
Yeah, definitely. Let's share a few.
Okay, how about this one? Defining the ultimate prize. True wealth is having the freedom to choose how you spend every hour of every day.
Boom. Right there.
Yeah.
Shifts the focus immediately from accumulation to autonomy. It's about control over your life energy, your time.
And the one that reframes money's role. Financial wealth is a tool, not a scorecard.
That's such a crucial mindset shift. If it's a tool, you ask, how can I best use this to build the life I want? If it's a scorecard, you just chase the next point, often mindlessly.
Yeah, huge difference. And I love this one about time. You can't buy time, but you can buy back your time.
Yeah. It highlights how smart financial choices are often about reducing the demands on your time, freeing you up. It's like swapping one asset money for another,
arguably more valuable one time.
Definitely. And lastly, the one that really drives home the importance of health. Your physical health is the foundation upon which your entire life is built. You can't build a skyscraper on a foundation of sand.
It just perfectly captures it, doesn't it?
Oh.
Health isn't optional. It's the absolute bedrock. Everything else rests on it. It's strategic investment number one.
So one of the best things about this framework is how practical it is. It's not just theory. What are some concrete things you, the listener, can actually do after hearing this?
Okay, number one, absolutely do that wealth portfolio audit. Seriously. Grab a piece of paper. List the five wealths and rate yourself honestly 1 to 10 on where you feel you are right now in each area.
Don't overthink it, just your gut feeling.
Exactly. That snapshot alone is incredibly revealing. It shows you immediately where the gaps and imbalances lie in your own life.
Okay, once you see the gaps, what's next?
Start time blocking for investment in the non-financial areas. Actually schedule time for exercise or reading or focused connection time with loved ones. Put it in your calendar like you would an important work meeting.
And treat it with the same seriousness, like non-negotiable.
Yes, that's the key. These aren't if I have time activities. They are crucial investments in your overall long-term wealth.
That makes sense. What about bigger decisions like career moves?
You need to start re-architecting career decisions. When you're looking at a new job or promotion, stop focusing only on the salary and title. Ask yourself, how will this impact all five types of wealth?
Right. Will it offer intellectual growth? Will the commute destroy my physical health? Does the company culture support social connection? Will I have less control over my time?
Exactly. Look at the total package through this wider lens. A pay cut might even be a net positive if it dramatically improves your time wealth or physical wealth.
Good point. Any final application tip?
Yeah. Focus on systematizing health. Don't just rely on willpower because that runs out. Build foundational habits that make healthy choices the default, the easy path.
Like prepping healthy meals on Sunday, having a set bedtime, making exercise a fixed part of your morning routine.
Precisely. Make it automatic. Remove the friction. That way, you protect your foundational physical wealth without constantly draining your mental energy on making the right choice.
So, wrapping up, what's the biggest takeaway or maybe the most surprising thing for you from exploring this framework?
For me, I think it's the quiet power of the search for enough. There's this immense sense of relief, almost liberation, that comes when you shift from the endless, externally driven pursuit of more to intentionally defining what enough looks like for you across all five areas to live a genuinely rich life. It takes the pressure off.
Yeah, defining your own sufficiency instead of letting the market dictate it. I felt that too. My big takeaway connecting it all is that prosperity, true prosperity, is designed, not just earned.
Ooh, I like that. Designed, not earned.
Yeah. It's not just about working harder within the existing flawed system. It's about consciously architecting a better system for your own life. One where thinking abundantly across all five dimensions creates those compounding positive returns. You get to be successful and fulfilled, healthy and connected. You don't have to choose.
That multidimensional flourishing, that really feels like the ultimate goal.
A really powerful way to rethink what truly matters. Thanks for joining us for the deep dive.
We hope this gives you some good food for thought for auditing your own life portfolio.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.